The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
It's Victor Dandridge, the hardest working man in comics, and you are listening to PVB Cast with John Orlando. Guys, I'm telling y'all, it's the best thing on the entire interweb. Listen long, listen strong. John, it's all you, man.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I am your humble host and your podcast purveyor, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 373. I hope all is well with you out there, and thank you very much for checking out this edition of the PVD Cast. Before I introduce and talk about my guest, I'd just like to be a little bit philosophical for a moment, if I may. In life, sometimes you may think that something happened just a few weeks ago, and when you really think about it, or when you research and look it up, you realize, oh no, that was a couple of months ago, not a couple of weeks ago. And that's kind of a fitting statement to make about this episode. So my guest is a comic creator out of Boston. His name is Colin Devonshire, and he has a project called By the Time I Get to Dallas. And we spoke last time that we spoke, I should say, was May of 2020. And that just blows my mind because I could have sworn that it was not that long in between episodes. I mean, that means Colin totally produced issues 1 and 2, produced issue 3, we never talked about it, and then he's back to talk about issue 4 with this episode. And I apologize to him off air, and kind of we even talk about it on air, that it just seems that time goes so quickly anymore. Especially when you're busy with a creative project like a comic book or a podcast. And so nonetheless, I'm very happy to have Colin come back on. We're going to talk about By the Time I Get to Dallas and the sister project, the Trinity Project. We're going to talk about issue 4, how you can get your hands on it. We're going to talk a little bit about the Kickstarter for it as well, which unfortunately, ladies and gentlemen, is ending on this Friday. So if you get this episode in your feed before Friday, check out the Kickstarter. There's some cool stuff going on there. Don't worry, it's already funded, and that's a great thing. And we even talk in our conversation about how you could get the book post Kickstarter. And trust me, Colin's got some avenues for that as well. So it's going to be a great episode. It's a fun episode. I had a blast reconnecting with Colin and talking about his projects, and we even talked a little Boston Bruins hockey. So with that being said, I want to thank my great sponsors of this podcast. Of course, I'm talking about World's Greatest Comics. You hear me talk about the store all the time. Every week, I tell you that if you need a comic book store to call your own in the Central Ohio area, there's none better than WG Comics. They've got it all for your fandom. They've got single issues, graphic novels, collections, back issues. And I mean, not just a small box of back issues. I mean, literally metric tons of back issues. They got so many back issues that I guarantee you could probably find that missing issue you need to complete your Silver Surfer run, or whatever. I just randomly picked Silver Surfer, but you get what I'm talking about. So you need to stop by the store if you're in the area. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. Or you can check them out online. Their website is wgcomics.com. And they're very active on their Facebook page. Just search for at WG Comics. And I say it all the time. I appreciate the support so much that, I mean, I'm lost for words sometimes that Jeff continues to be a great sponsor of the PVD Cast. So thank you again, Jeff, and all the fine folks at World's Greatest Comics. Well, I'm starting to ramble a little bit, so that means let's get to that conversation, all right? So I'm going to throw it to a quick break, and on the other side of the break, you're going to hear my conversation with Colin Devonshire. ladies and gentlemen, this evening I am sitting down with a man that hasn't been on this podcast in a while. It's shocking how many years has passed, but nonetheless, I'm sitting down with Colin Devonshire. Colin, how are you doing, man?
Great. Great to talk to you again.
I know. And, you know, off air, I apologized, and I'm going to do it on air. It just seems like I thought to myself, oh, it's only been a couple of years, and it's been three. It's been three since we've last chatted. A lot has happened, and we'll get caught up.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, our last talk was early summer of 2020 and like kind of like the darkest COVID period for me anyway. I was running a Kickstarter campaign that was really kind of just keeping me, you know, sane. So I guess probably now a good time to explain that I'm an emergency doctor here in Boston. And been making a comic book on the side, and comic book has been going awesome, producing it on my own and releasing it through Kickstarter, which is how you found me. And I had done an interview with you for my first issue in 2019, and then COVID hit, and I decided to keep going with the comic as a way to just sort of cope with stress. And that was the summer of 2020, and it's hard to believe. I think I've done another two Kickstarters since then, another couple. I'm on issue number four right now. The production cycle slowed down a little bit for me, which is part of it. But hey, you've been busy. I mean, I've seen you putting out lots and lots of podcasts with a variety of comics and wrestling and hockey, so you haven't needed me.
Well, you know what? Before we dive into your comic book, we got to talk about it because I've been waiting to get your opinion. You're a diehard Boston Bruins fan.
Yeah.
What's your opinion of the team this year?
It's been crazy. You know, I was expecting so little from the start of this year because we knew McAvoy and Marchand both had, you know, big surgeries in the off season. So we were just hoping to kind of stay 500 until those guys got back sometime around Thanksgiving, because they didn't really seem like they added much except Krejci, and no one knew what he was going to be like, you know, a million years old and coming back from Europe. So very low expectations, did not buy any tickets ahead of time this season. And they have been astounding. I mean, they just play so well, so together. I was not a big fan of Bruce Cassidy getting fired because he made it to the playoffs every year, and it was hard to argue with his results. And, you know, Sweeney was getting a real bad rap around here for the last several years because of his drafts. And I thought he was the one that probably should have gone. And I was completely wrong because he was right. It looks like the team needed a new voice in the locker room, and Montgomery's been, you know, exactly what they needed, I guess. And to watch them have an easy time scoring, because, you know, even when you love the Bruins, even when they're at their best, they're defense first, good goaltending, and you're just hoping that they score enough. And now the defense scores, they've got, you know, scorers on every line. It's a blast. They're so much fun to watch. So
you know what? You got to give Sweeney some credit too, because Taylor Hall goes down, Foligno goes down. What does he do? Yep. He just goes out and gets Garrett Hathaway.
He's got a Hathaway and Bertuzzi.
And
Orlov. And I love that he went and got assholes. Like, we needed dickheads, you know, like to really get through the playoffs. Like, you can't just have a bunch of guys that skate around. You need some people that are mean. And so I was so psyched with those moves. And, you know, you'll need it. You'll need the depth. Things will happen. It's still the Bruins, so you still believe they're going to get snake bit. But you're just trying to enjoy the season, because, I mean, you just don't get to see a team that just doesn't lose. You know, it's crazy.
How many losses do they have? 12?
Something like that. It had been like a couple of months. They hit a little, like after they clinched the playoffs, they went on a little bit of a skid. You know, they clinched the playoffs and whenever that was, like several weeks ago, but they seem to have kind of righted the ship. And you know, I mean, what they don't have a whole lot to play for except just trying to stay tuned up, and so, you know, the leadership has got to keep them focused and be ready for the playoffs. But you kind of forget that we've never seen a team be this good. I mean, get this get to 50 this fast, and their goal differential is insane, and it's, you know, if they could just get the power play working a little better before the playoffs, it's going to be fun to, I mean, the East is insane. So no matter what, it's going to be a dogfight.
I agree with you 110% that the East is the better conference this year. I don't know who's going to come out of the West. I don't even know if it matters because they're all good teams, but not great teams. That's the thing. You know what? It's a few weeks before I have my big NHL playoff show, but I'm going to say it right here, right now.
Uh-oh, don't do it.
No, I'm going to say it. Oh, I think the Bruins are lifting the cup.
Did I just jinx it? I can't say that. I can't say those words. I can just nervously bite my lip and not say anything. But it'll be good. Yeah, I got into the Bruins, you know, right the season before the cup in 2011. And so I would feel like I was an early Bruins fan that first couple of years. So now it would be really good to be a part of another one. Mm-hmm. So we'll see.
All right, let's switch gears. Let's talk about your book. By the time I get to Dallas. Mm-hmm. So can you give the listeners a little summary without giving away too much about what the project's all about?
Sure. So By the Time I Get to Dallas is a comic book in which 80% of human beings across the entire planet start migrating to a single spot on the globe. And in the midst of this a failing medical student named Rudy Deckert has to hit the road in order to find and save his girlfriend, learn to become a doctor, take on a militia that is using the migration to enforce its own new world order, and along the way try to save or possibly destroy humanity. So it is a six-part comic book series that I've been putting out since 2019 at a rate of about one per year. Each issue is also backed by a separate companion book called The Trinity Project, which is also by me, but with a different art team, which delves deeper into the background and mystery that led to this migration. And these stories start to intertwine as the series goes forward. By the time it's all done, it'll be a total of 12 books between the two of them and at least 300 pages. And so putting it out 1 year at a time through Kickstarter. We're right at the end of the Kickstarter campaign for issues 4. And that's going well. We've funded, and so this book will happen. Then I got to get 5 and 6 out. And when I can get it all bound up in one big trade volume, I will be a very, very happy person. But it's been an amazing process to go through.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Rudy, if you will. Can you maybe dive into like his personality and some of the problems that he faces? And basically, what archetypes did you use when you started creating and writing Rudy?
Yeah. So, you know, it's kind of funny. When I came up with this story, I didn't have any characters. It was really just this idea that literally came in a dream that I had this dream where I was raking leaves and all my neighbors were out raking leaves and they all just one at a time kind of just dropped their rakes and walked off in the same direction into the distance and just left me there. And that was it. That was the whole dream. I woke up and got this really eerie feeling like, wow, everybody was just leaving and going to a place and I wasn't going there. And in my mind, it was Dallas. I don't know why. I have no idea. And so I just got up and started writing a treatment of this idea. And that was in 2011. And I didn't really have any plans with it. I just sort of sketched out sort of like, what would that world be like if most of the world started just leaving and going to another place? What would happen to the people left behind? And it wasn't until a couple of years later that I decided to actually make it a real story, like a fiction story. And then I realized it needed a character. And I've never really been much of a fiction writer. I'd done a lot of like creative writing, but not really so much fiction. I realized, well, I can write what I know. I could make him a medical student, and then I could be actually his story about becoming a doctor in the midst of this whole sort of worldwide apocalypse. And then I realized, okay, that's my hook, is like, you know, there's plenty of zombie style apocalypses, but there's not a lot of, you know, emergency doctors writing comic books. And I can write about Rudy's experiences growing up as a doctor in the midst of all this. So as part of that, once I seized on that idea, I knew that I wanted it to, I knew that he had to change, he had to grow. And so the way to do that is have him start as bad as you can be so that he can become good. So I really wanted to make him a guy that you are just barely rooting for. So, you know, I thought about a lot of the kind of, you know, anti-hero types that I grew up with. Ash from Evil Dead was the big one that came to mind, where, you know, he's got the square chin and he looks like the hero, but he's just such a dick. And the only... You know, he only does the right thing after he's screwed everything else up, you know, 10 other ways. And, but the only thing that saves him is that he's really funny. And like, he's always just got the one liner where that just kind of makes you stick it out with him. And so that was a big inspiration for Rudy. The Harrison Ford Blade Runner, so it was, we're kind of going for that, where I didn't want him to, I wanted him, it's easy to say he's flawed, but I wanted him to really have a specific, you know, direction he needed to grow, where he was a guy who went into medicine, really not necessarily for the right reasons. He wanted to be the best and always be sort of achieving, and, you know, medicine definitely has people like that who just want to climb the ladder, and he's just wants to climb the ladder, but doesn't really understand that he's got to be there for people, be there for his patients. And he doesn't really get that in the beginning, where he thinks everything's a procedure, everything's a way to kind of get something new on your resume. And so he has to learn empathy and learn a bedside manner. So he has to become a good person through the course of this story, in addition to learning medicine, and in addition to, you know, trying to be there for other people that he meets along the way, and also trying to save the world. So that's what Rudy has ahead of him.
Well, I'm going to say, you know, I saw that you had the Kickstarter up for the fourth issue. And I knew that, by the way, that we tried to get ourselves coordinated. We had a little scheduling snafu and whatnot, but yeah. in preparation, I reread issues 1 through 3.
Oh, nice.
I read them originally. And I want to say to folks that are listening, and please don't take this the wrong way, it holds up really, really well. I still enjoyed, I never rooted for Rudy. Sorry, Colin. I was like, this dude is a dick and I want bad things to happen to him.
That's all right. They will. He has to suffer.
Yeah, but I still disliked him. I still found, I think one of the more, I don't want to give too much away, but there's a giant thing to do with a boat that I found to be, again, as equally entertaining as it was the first time. So a tip of the hat on that. It holds up well, sir.
Good. Yeah. No, I'm okay. If you're still reading after 3 issues, that's good. I think he's gonna start to turn the corner for you a little bit, you know, with some help from his friends. But that's great to hear. I should probably go back and read them too. Be a good idea. thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong. You do have a change in the creative team, correct?
We do. So I've been very lucky in that I had a very stable team for a very long time. As I said, I started writing this in earnest in 2013, and I first went out looking for a penciler in 2014, late 14, early 15, and was lucky. In my mind, I thought I'd hire some novice artist for not very much money just to get this thing drawn and say that I did it. And at that point, it was a 100-page script. And that was my idea. And then as I started looking for artists, like I honed my pitch a little bit, and on this Reddit community of comics makers, I met Juan Fran Moyano, who's an amazing artist in Spain, and he had, you know, posted that he was, you know, in between projects and looking for a job, and I said, well, let's give it a shot. And I pitched him, and he said yes. And all of a sudden I had somebody who could really draw. And I gave him my first treatments of the characters, and he sent them back, and they were the characters. Like, he was like in my head. And this was my first time ever having anybody draw anything I'd written. And it was insane to send these scripts off, and they come back a couple of days later, and he's drawn a page of like what was just this crazy idea in my head. So I was lucky enough to have Juan Fran for issues 1 through 3. And, which was a long time, you know, five, six. When did we finish the last one? A 6-year process to get those first issues out. And through that was COVID. COVID was hard on him and his family. And I think, I don't want to speak for Juan Fran, but I think he kind of burnt out with the industry and needed to step back, because I think it had become difficult for him. And so I totally understand that. And, you know, anytime you pick up a comic book or a series or a graphic novel or a trade paperback, you'll see like the teams change. And so I always knew this, you know, was a possibility. But luckily there are lots of other great artists. And so we've been lucky enough to hook up with our new penciler, Ben Worrell, who lives in Colorado. And Ben is awesome. He's great to work with. A lot of, you know, energy. He does a really cool job with his layouts. Really interesting visual storyteller. And so it's been a great process with him. And the rest of the team actually has stayed the same. I have the same colorist, who's actually Juan Fran's brother, Jay Moyano. He stayed with us, along with the same inker, Dario Marin, and the same letterer, James Reed. So there's still, I'm hoping, and I feel like there is from the pages that I've got, a continuity still. Ben's style is different, but I think it still feels like it's the same world. So I'm excited to get these new pages out to people. And, we're not trying to pawn it off as if it's, you know, the art didn't change. It's different, but it's cool. And I think it'll hold up and move the story forward in a great way.
Now, you do have a separate creative team for the Trinity Project, correct?
So my artist there is Greg Woronchak in Montreal, and he's been awesome, super fun and easy to work with. He's got this sort of, you know, golden age kind of style, which I like juxtaposed with the Dallas story. And then he does all his line art. And then my colorist is actually one of my best friends for my whole life, Jason Finestone, which is crazy, because it's neither of us did comic books at all, I think, at the age of like 40. I started dabbling in this, and then he, I think, just to kind of, you know, pass the time, would do coloring projects like on his iPad maybe. And like, he was into reading comics, and I think he started, you know, coloring comics more just sort of like for fun, and started getting good at it and taking it seriously and getting gigs. And now he's like all over the place. He's got an image book. And I probably won't be able to afford him anymore. We went to college together. We were in bands together. Like, to have him working on my book is pretty trippy. But weird things happen. And then James Reed does the colors. And been lucky enough to bring in a new editor this time around, Claire Napier, in England. And she has really added a lot to this book. I'm hoping everybody sees what I see, which is that this is the best written book, and a lot of it is because of her. She really, you know, drilled down on how to make these characters each have their own moments. I'm excited about it. I'm excited to have her to work on the rest of this series, because I know it's going to make it really good.
I'm going to interrupt my conversation with Colin for just one moment to talk to you about World's Greatest Comics. They are a proud sponsor of the PVD cast, and they're also your one-stop shop for all of your comic book related needs. They've got single issues, collections, graphic novels, toys, collectibles, hundreds upon hundreds of back issues, you name it, they got it. So you need to stop by the store if you're in Central Ohio. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. Or if you're out of the area, you can check them out online. WGComics.com is a website, and their Facebook page is at WGComics. Now, the Trinity Project, if I may, it's kind of like a prequel, correct?
Correct. Yeah, it takes place about 20 years before the events and by the time I get to Dallas.
So why did you decide to make kind of two adjacent tales, if you will?
Yeah, because I'm really bad at setting limits on my like, it's not that I regret doing this, but it was the hardest possible way to do a thing. Because what anybody will tell you is, like, if you're breaking into comics, what you need to do is do short stories, like do 4-pagers, 8-pagers that have a beginning, middle, and end, and put those out, get those done, get pages under your belt. And so what I did was I wrote, by the time I get to Dallas, which was, you know, started as 100-page, but realistically, as I started, like, you know, writing additional drafts, I just knew I wasn't giving it enough space, and it was going to end up being closer to 200. So now, like, that's the thing you shouldn't do, which is have, like, an enormous passion project that is 200 pages that you won't be happy with unless it's done. But then on top of that, I built this whole backstory to the main story. I was working with an editor at the time, like, to develop the story, named Matthew Idelson, who'd done a lot of great stuff at Marvel and DC, and he was awesome. One of the things he was asking is, like, well, you know, I feel like we need more of the why, you know, behind the migration, because I hadn't really revealed that yet, you know, through the scripts he'd seen. And so, like, I started coming up with more of a backstory behind it. It ended up being this whole other 3-act arc. And I think he just wanted me to just say, it's aliens, or it's a virus, or it's, you know, it was like a poison in the mac and cheese. Like, he just wanted, like, an answer. And I wrote a whole other script. But I liked that idea. And I liked that there was, like, a whole other bigger story underneath that you don't need to have. Like, you don't need to ever read the Trinity Project and Dallas will hold up. But if you do read it, it's going to be very rewarding, because you're going to see little things that connect the stories together. I always loved Lost. Lost, I thought, was just, like, fantastic storytelling. And to me, Trinity Project is kind of like the Dharma Initiative. It's like all these little sinkholes where there's bits of story that you can go chase. And so I wanted to do something like that. But it's a much harder lift to write two stories that are going to intertwine and come together and have the beats that occur at the same time in the story, so you can put them out at the same time. So, yeah, but it's cool. It's going to be awesome. And when it's all put together in one big book, like, if I do it right, I think it's going to be killer. But this is exactly the opposite of what any novice comic creator should be doing. So don't do it, kids. Do a short little story.
What is the old saying that I used to hear all the time when I was a kid? Like, don't do as I say, do as I do, or something like that.
Yeah, this is the opposite. Definitely don't do what I'm doing. Please don't. But that's okay. Like, I'm 50. Like, I'm not trying to break into the comics industry and establish a resume. Like, that's not really what this is about for me. This is the story that I'm working on, and I want to make it as good as I can. And if it takes 10 years, it takes 10 years, but, like, I want it to be good. And I'm learning a lot along the way, but, like, that is the product for me. And when it is done, I know I'm going to have a killer, you know, start to finish book. And if I get another, you know, if someone wants to publish it, awesome. I've got lots of other ideas, you know, for what I do next, but, like, this is the thing, this has to get done, and that's okay. You know, I was impatient to do the 4-page thing. I had an idea. I had a deliverable, which was, by the time I get to Dallas, that was what was in my head from the beginning. And if it ends up being twice as long or three times as long as I thought it was going to be, that's okay, as long as it's good. So we'll get there.
Well, let's talk a little bit about you and some of your influences as you sat mm-hmm. down to write the book, and that. Who are some of the influences that gave you, well, inspiration?
You know, so I was a comics geek back in, like, you know, 7th, 8th grade, back, which was really kind of a new golden age of comics and graphic novels. So that was in the early mid 80s with Chris Claremont, You know, I think X-Men 182 was probably the first new X-Men I bought. So like coming off of like the Phoenix saga and Frank Miller's Dark Knight came out in whatever, was that 84, 83, maybe a little later. Alan Moore's Watchmen, Lone Wolf and Cub, I remember reading. So these were all like seminal, you know, stories that took the whole thing to like this new respectable level. And so those were the things that I loved the most. I mean, those handful of stories I just listed. Frank Miller's Daredevil run, the Born Again sequence was just, you know, one of my favorite comic runs. So I don't know how much those influence my writing. I don't go back and look at those for certain, but I think like I know how to read a comic and I can think very easily in a visual medium, just I think from reading all those as a kid. When I started doing this, started writing, you know, coming up with this idea, I went back to comic book stores for the first time in a really long time. And, you know, I'd been reading like some DC and Marvel stuff, but I'd really never read indie comics. I started looking like, well, what else is there? What is there that's like this idea for me? And so I came across Winter World, which is, I think, a classic black and white thing from the 80s, which is like a post-apocalyptic adventure story. Great Pacific is like an environmental apocalypse kind of story. I'm afraid to read Why the Last Man because people have said, oh, your story reminds me of Why the Last Man. So like, I'm afraid. Who's that? Is that Brian Vaughn?
That's Brian K. Vaughn. Yeah.
Yeah. I love Brian K. Vaughn. Saga is amazing. His, what's the Pride of Baghdad is amazing. Ex Machina. I love, but I'm afraid to watch, but I won't let myself read, you know, Why the Last Man, because I don't want it to make me just stop writing. So I stumbled on one of those kinds of books. The Massive, is that Brad Wood? Another like environmental kind of apocalypse story. So I started finding a lot of books that just sort of, you know, to show me how comics are being made these days in this kind of like speculative fiction apocalypse space, which is, I guess, what my story is. But yeah, so those are some of the, but now like most of the comics I read are from Kickstarter, you know, like that's the vast majority is stuff that's cool on Kickstarter that I back and, you know, which is really awesome. A great, you know, I feel like I'm cheating on my friends if I go and like, you know, buy a mainstream comic book because like I should be giving the money on Kickstarter. But then you see your friends on comic book shelves and that's pretty awesome. People that started on Kickstarter are now, you know, picked up and distributed. And that seems to be happening a lot to people I know, which is great.
Well, let's talk a little bit. The Kickstarter for issue 4, by the time this episode airs, it'll be down to the final day. But let's talk a little bit about, you've reached the goal.
Yep.
So what are some other perks, stretch goals, et cetera, that you still have out there?
So the stretch goal that I do is very simple. I give away stuff that's not mine. So I go to my comic book making friends and I ask them if they would like to, you know, give me complete stories of theirs for me to package up in what I call an all-star digital bundle. And as I hit, I don't make it dollar goals, I make it backer numbers because I feel like it's much easier to talk about backer numbers than dollars. And as I hit backers, so, you know, 150, 175, 200, et cetera, I add more digital books to this bundle. And so people that like my stuff, I think are going to like these stories because these are ones that, like, I didn't just, like, go and, like, find some, like, random previews, ash cans that to just let, you know, to give people. Like, these are people I really love as creators who do stories that I think are awesome. And I go to them. And they give me their stuff. And so the digital bundle that I'll be giving out right now has like 300 pages of complete, like, I think there's like 9 or 10 books and graphic novels in there from, and people who have been picked up by major publishers now. So like we've got comics there by Honor Vincent, who's been picked up by Scout for her New Rat City comic, which is fantastic. So we're doing her, her book, which is called Andraste. If I knew Latin, I would know how to pronounce that. David Taylor is one of my favorite creators. He's got an awesome book called Wild Nature, and he's letting me have like the first 110 pages of that. So a whole list that everybody gets. So if you back at any one of my reward tiers, you're going to get, in addition to my stuff, which I think is pretty good, you're going to get 300 pages of other stuff, which I know is really good. So I think that's a pretty damn good value, you know? And that's really all what Kickstarter is about. You want people to feel like they're getting something special. And this is not something you can get when you buy the comics on my online store. It's only through the Kickstarter thing. Other cool stuff, we've got a collector's box for the first time, which I'm really psyched about because I have all my floppies. And I never know where to put them. And I'm sure other people do too. Like, this is going to be a 12-issue series, not even counting the variant covers and all that. Like, you want a place to put them. So I've got a really, really nice collector's box that looks great on a bookshelf. So those are some of the big ones. We've still got a couple cameo slots left. We sold out most of those, but that's always fun. People like being in the book. So all sorts of good stuff in addition to just a couple high quality comics.
I really like the collector's box. That was my next question to talk to you about, because that looks slick.
Yeah, that came out great. And there's ways of like mocking these things up. There's programs and stuff you can do where you can mock up what a comic is going to look like, mock up what a box is going to look like, but it's not the same as knowing what it's going to look like. And so I really wanted to have it in my hands before the campaign, and I had to order them. And like, the cost goes from like, if you order one, it's like $60 for one box. If you order, $50, it's a whole lot, or 50 boxes, it's a whole lot less. Mm-hmm. But like, I really had no idea how good they were going to be. Like, was anybody going to want them? And was it going to be left just holding 50 of these boxes in my basement? But I just took a plunge and I bought 50 of them, and they arrived like a day or two before the campaign. And plus, you're worried, like, did you screw it up? Did you mess up the files? You never know when you get something from a printer, what it's actually going to look like. And it came out awesome. Like, the quality of the printing is great. It's like this nice satin feel to it. So I came up with a term. It's like a coffee table collector's box. Like, it looks like a coffee table book, except that you open it and the comics are inside. So I've got that one this time. And now what I think I might do is do an additional box next time that's for the variants, because you probably couldn't fit all the books. If you were a completist and had this whole series, I don't know that you'd be able to fit it all in one box. So I might do a separate box for all the variant covers and make that be a really cool, like, additional thing. So, but yeah, it looks good. You should get it.
I'm seriously considering it. You don't have to twist my arm, Colin. I was wicked impressed by that. So, all right. Well, let's talk real quickly before I ask my final question. If folks are hearing this episode after the Kickstarter has ended, where can they find issue 4? Where can they find all the other issues, the Trinity Project, et cetera, et cetera?
Yep. So the simplest thing to do is you can still go to Kickstarter, and then you don't have to remember any URLs or anything. Just go to Kickstarter and type in "By the Time I Get to Dallas," or you can just type in my name, Colin Devonshire, and it's going to bring you to all of our launches. And when you go to that page, there's going to be a button there that says, like, I would like to order the book. And that's going to take you to a pre-order site where all my books are going to be available. So even though the campaign is over, you'll still be able to order these books. And then they will get sent out to you as I'm fulfilling the campaign. So By the Time I Get to Dallas on Kickstarter, just go to the most recent in fact, I'll update all the pages, so all of them will have a button that goes to the pre-order page. So all you have to do is remember Kickstarter and the title of this comic, and you'll be able to find it and order pretty much all the good stuff.
Cool. All right, final question before we hit, website, social media, and all that jazz. Mm-hmm. Let's just say that maybe a year or so down the road that Hollywood comes calling, and they say, hey, Colin, we like this book. We're going to option it for a movie.
Yeah.
You get to pick who plays Rudy. Who plays Rudy?
This is a fun one. This is a fun one that we have talked about around the house. for a while, my daughter, Virginia, was very into Harry Styles. And Harry Styles had just been in Dunkirk, mm-hmm. done a bit of acting. And so, and he was kind of like the right age. This was a few years ago. Like, oh, that would be kind of fun. He's kind of got the snotty but likable kind of thing to him. He might be a little too old by the time this gets done. And I don't know who any of the young actors are. Timothée Chalamet, similar kind of thing. You know, he's got like a gravitas and kind of a snottiness to him, but you still like him. So those are two kind of younger actors. You know, but it doesn't need to be a white dude. You know, it could be anybody. You know, if it got made into a movie, I'd be pretty open to anybody. It's not that I haven't thought about it. So it could be on the horizon. We'll see.
All right. Okay, let's talk about your website, social media, and all that fun stuff where folks can follow you.
Sure. It's hard to say. pitdocpress.com. So pitdoc is kind of a term that we sometimes refer to ourselves as in emergency medicine. So emergency doctors, a pit doc. So PITDOCPRESS, pitdocpress.com is my website. And you can pretty much find everything that I do through there. That'll link to my Kickstarters. It'll link to my store. You can sign up there for my newsletter, blog, all that stuff. I don't tweet. I have now been kicked out of my Instagram account, so we don't need to worry about that. I can't find the password, so that's going well. I'm on Facebook, Pit Doc Press, or By the Time I Get to Dallas are both handles for Facebook. You can also find me personally as Colin Devonshire, but I think my website, because that's the only thing that I'm not going to get kicked out of, because it's mine. But yeah, social media, I'm gradually becoming that guy who like is not capable of really running any of them. I can only actually make like a pen and ink like book. Yeah.
So. Well, let me just say this real quick, another compliment. Your website is pretty badass. So people I mean, it's slick. It's very well produced. So
let's give a shout out to my my web designer guy, Mike Harrington.
There you go.
He designed that and does the hosting, and he did an awesome job. And yeah, I think it is pretty good. When I remember to update it, I'm always like, oh wow, it's got a lot of good stuff on here. I remember writing that. I remember doing that. So I don't know. I'm glad that somebody goes to see it, because I don't really follow my analytics at all. But I like it. It makes me happy.
Oh, don't get me started on analytics. I don't even want to. That's another 2-hour conversation, Colin. Which
yeah.
You know. Anyways. Hey, thanks again for coming on, Colin. I know it's been way too long, and I'm going to make sure that that doesn't happen again. But thanks again, man, for sitting down and chatting with me tonight.
Oh, absolutely. I really appreciate everything you do. You know, sticking with this being a awesome way to get the word out about comics. You know, it's having people who read and pay attention really makes it all worthwhile. So I really appreciate you having me on again, and we'll get through there. We got a few more issues to go.
You got it. You're always welcome back. So with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break, and on the other side of the break, I'll be back to wrap up the episode. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, my conversation with Colin Devonshire, talking about the fourth issue of By the Time I Get to Dallas, and of course talking about many other topics as well. I hope you enjoyed the episode, because I sure as heck, as I stated in the intro, I really enjoyed chatting with Colin and reconnecting with him. So check out his stuff, pitdocpress.com, best place to go to get all the information that you need or want for Colin and his various projects. All right, now it's about time for me to tell you where you can get in touch with me if you want to do so. You can find me on Twitter. My Twitter handle is at PVDMVP. You can find me on Facebook or Instagram. At PVDcast is the handles for those outlets. And if you want to shoot me an email, you can do that as well. johnorlando@pvdcast.com is the email address. Now let me tell you a few different avenues you can tell some folks about if they are curious about the PVD Cast. Well, obviously, pvdcast.com is the online home of yours truly and a great place to get every single episode. But it's also available through all of those podcasting outlets. You know, all the major ones, all the big ones, you know, like Stitcher, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, etc., etc. Just go to your favorite podcasting app search bar, put in PVD Cast. Sometimes you have to put my name after it, and you should find it. And when you do that, please rate and review. Rating and reviewing helps me out tremendously. And of course, you want to subscribe so that you never miss an episode of the PVD Cast. But wait. I forgot there's a couple of other places you could tell some folks to check out if they want to hear my great podcast. Well, first of all, you can check out the Facebook page every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I do a little Facebook broadcast, so that's a great, easy way to get your fix of the PVD Cast. And as I've been mentioning for the last couple of months, I'm also on CROC Radio. That's right, out of British Columbia. And you can find CROC on a lot of different outlets, including OnlineRadioBox.com, GetMeRadio.com, Streama.com, TuneIn.com, MyTunerRadio.com. If you love internet radio, you need to check out Croc, all right? It's a great station. I'm so happy to be part of it. I really do appreciate the opportunity to have my thoughts and my opinions stream out into our great northern neighbor. And since we're talking about this type of interaction between you and me and this podcast, I would ask you, if you're listening to that Facebook broadcast, like it. If you think that I have a very poignant tweet, please retweet it. Liking posts and whatnot help out tremendously. And again, it's much like rating and reviewing on one of those podcast apps. It really does a lot for me, and it lets those companies know who's listening, where, when, and all that other stuff. So if you could do that, I would greatly, greatly appreciate it. All right, well, that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to get on out of here. I want to thank you one more time for checking out the episode, and I will chat at each and every one of you later. Stay righteous, stay independent, and stay safe and healthy. Has been a presentation of John Orlando Enterprises, LLC, copyright 2020.